Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson.
And I'm Tom Deason.
Welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily. Coming to you from Japan every day throughout the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another Rugby World Cup Daily podcast. I'm your co-host Tom Deason, and once again, like the last few nights, I'm not with my colleague Georgina Robinson, who we have got on the line. Where are you, G? And are you able to talk?
Well, here goes nothing. I'm on a train between Yokohama and Tokyo, flouting every rule about not talking on trains, being an obnoxious gaijin or foreigner to bring you this. But actually, if there is one night that is worth looking like an obnoxious foreigner for, it is the night I've just had. I was at Yokohama International Stadium to witness, I reckon, the best World Cup game I might ever see, unless it's the Wallabies winning a final. But the Brave Blossoms 28-21 defeat of Scotland was just unlike anything I've ever seen or felt. And I say felt because I felt it in the fans, from the Japanese and their national anthem, which is, from what I've read, one of the oldest in the world. The whole stadium was alive. I mean, it's amazing, solemn, hymn-like, beautiful song. And the stadium literally just sort of thrummed with vibrations. It was really special, and that gave way to roars from the crowd. And it just got better and better from there.
At what point was it most electric being there? Like, obviously at the start, no doubt, when they raced out to an early lead, but like, are we talking the end, or like, did you sort of feel them get more excited as it became closer to winning? Or
one moment that stands out was Matsushima's try, the Japan's first try, because of course Finn Russell scored first, so Scotland were on board, Japan were down 7-0, and you know, Matsushima going over was the first time I think everyone got a sense that, you know, no, this isn't, they're not going to bottle it, they're here, they just need the settler, and they're coming. So that was really amazing. I mean, that roar was just kind of shook the place. And then actually, I think it was Fukuoka who scored after the break. That one, you know, just kind of piling, that was the bonus point try, piling on the misery, because Scotland just looked like they were, you know, being sucked into the book hole of the Brave Blossoms. That was really special too. But even when Scotland came back, you know, like, Every time Japan made a tackle or turned the ball over or won a scrum, and how good was their set piece, there was also a massive roar. You know, it's not just tries. They kind of recognised it was anything, any ball the Japanese kind of touched in a positive way was rewarded with an almighty roar. It was extraordinary.
I saw some quotes come through from Jamie Joseph, the Japan coach, and he was very modest, you know, obviously paid credit to his players, but spoke about the, you know, how the typhoon had almost galvanised them. What was the sort of wash up with Jamie, and in particular, obviously Scotland too, you know, cast as villains in this whole typhoon saga of playing and not playing? What was the wash up?
Well, Greg Townsend, to his credit, Scotland were out first after the match. And Townsend, to his credit, opened by saying, I just want to thank Japan for having us and to extend our deepest condolences. So I thought that was a really gracious touch because, of course, the aftertaste most people had was the Scotland Rugby Union CEO being rather heavy-handed with the threat of legal action, which, you know, I mean, in his own head, I'm sure Mark Dodson could separate the two issues, but it just looked clumsy and poorly timed, particularly because of what kind of transpired with the typhoon. And, you know, I think it's 18 or 20 dead as we have this conversation. So, I think Greg Townsend and I actually think the conduct of the Scots on the field, you would have seen some clips of both teams tunnelling each other off. off. And then when they went to the sheds, they actually returned after a few minutes to basically do a bow on the opposite side of the stadium to the crowd. And they were all lined up together, both teams, and interspersed, you know, a couple of Japan jerseys, a couple of Scotland jerseys. And that was very special. And, you know, when all said and done, Scotland looked like the proud nation that they are, and I don't think they will be remembered by Mark Dodson's angry comments or poorly timed comments. I think they'll be remembered by that two-try comeback that, you know, that they threatened till the end, and then their grace in defeat. They were, you know, and even Laidlaw, their captain, Greg Laidlaw, and when he came out to speak to the media afterwards, there was not a hint of rancour or, you know, I mean, that's a team that knows they stuffed it up. You know, they could have done more earlier, and then also came up against a team that just outplayed them. And it was just one of those extraordinary nights.
It was interesting on the I was watching from my hotel just on the television, you know, with Japanese commentary, and obviously I couldn't understand a thing, but that was also nice. But also tuned into some of the Fox commentary afterwards as well, and it was quite interesting. Guys like Justin Harrison were so impressed by that Japanese performance, about talking them about them being genuine World Cup contenders. Don't know whether that's a little bit over the top, but look, like, in that first half, from what we all saw, like, that was just one of the great games of the tournament, if not the best game of the tournament, you know, even for those who weren't.
If not, I mean, hands down, the best game of the tournament as a neutral fan. I mean, it was Wales-Fiji before this, and maybe Ireland-Japan before that. And for me, what sets it apart, it's, you know, like, obviously New Zealand Springboks or Ireland-Wales or Ireland-England or... They're all compelling matches because of the caliber of the teams. But this one for me was just two teams who had everything on the line. For Scotland, it was, you know, elimination was disaster because it was bowing out of the World Cup, and they've only missed a quarterfinal twice since World Cups started in 1987. And then Japan, I mean, they would, you know, this was about more than their own glory. This was about trying to lift their countrymen and women after a pretty horrendous 48 hours, and also trying to, you know, there's such national pride in Japan, and it was a real collective. There was also no option for them, so that's what I think set this game apart. And until it really got away from Scotland, I thought it was a really even matchup. I know that Scotland were defending a lot, but they were certainly trying to play a pressure game, and occasionally, you know, if Japan weren't so relentless and accurate, creative in attack, they could have pinned Japan down and applied pressure and got some reward there. So that's why I can't go past this game as the game of the tournament, because both teams had so much to gain and so much to lose, and I think that's what really set it apart.
Well, gee, it's 20 past 12 on a Monday morning, and we are finally at the end of the pool stages. We are both pretty tired after what's been a massive month so far, but the good news is that we will soldier on. The podcast will continue for at least another week, and we have our quarterfinalists all locked up. Obviously, Wales were too strong for Uruguay today, winning 35-13. So that means that we have our quarterfinals in order: England v Australia in Oita on Saturday, New Zealand v Ireland in Tokyo on Saturday after that, then Wales v France in Oita on the Sunday, and Japan versus South Africa on the Sunday. Talk about a smorgasbord of knockout footy. Which of those games whets your appetite the most?
I'm just getting a notice on the train that I might be changing to another train. I think it's telling me to hold on to a handrail, actually. But look, one thing I did you did jog my memory. I think, you know, this, I mean, Justin Harrison's commentary is on the money in terms of the quality of Japan, and and also their smarts. I mean, that's an intelligence strategy they put together, and that offloading support play game is, and not only the intent of the strategy, but the accuracy to pull it off is probably, you know, 3-4 years in the making, right? But the only danger I do think against the Springboks is that this was Japan's grand final. This was, you know, emptying the tank, leaving nothing out there. So both emotionally and physically, I just wonder what they'll be able to put back into themselves over the coming days. No doubt Jamie Joseph and Tony Brown will have ideas around that. But, you know, Michael Leach, the captain, didn't even know who they were playing. You know, knew they were through, didn't know who they were playing. And, of course, Jamie Joseph did, but that's an insight into they literally weren't looking past this game. And they put everything into it. It'll be interesting to see what they can bring against South Africa.
According to Phil Kearns on the Fox commentary, Jamie Joseph has a university degree in psychology. So he was just laughing about how maybe he could tap into that this week to try and get them mentally ready or freshen them up in some way for what's going to be a huge game against South Africa. But look, yeah, I probably won't see you for a few days, G. We're sort of going on different paths this week, given it is quarterfinal week and there's been a few logistical changes for both teams. You're going to head down to... Have you got a flight booked yet for Oita?
I do have a flight booked down to Oita in the next, about 6 Monday night, I think it is. I'm going to go down and I'm going to be hanging with England, bringing you all the latest from Eddie Jones's camp, which should be fun. You know, we all sort of whip ourselves up into a bit of a lather about what the Eddie verse check kind of narrative could offer. But it wouldn't surprise me. Eddie loves some strategies for sure. But it wouldn't be surprised me if it's not quite as fiery. I mean, I don't think Michael Sheck has got much to draw on. He's kind of, I think, done his dash with a very good bar on Friday night about, well, they've said the Typhoon gods have smiled on them. They better win, haven't they? I mean, might drop leave it there and now just keep a low profile, I reckon. But that's where I'll be. I'll be with England and you'll be with Australia. So plenty of, the week started with a bang for me. But I think there'll be plenty to keep us busy over the next few days.
Absolutely. Yeah, look, I'll be heading to Ottawa on Monday, today. And then maybe try and get a bullet train down to Oita and maybe meet you on Tuesday or Wednesday. So, and then we'll carry on from there before Saturday's big game. But it sounds like it's getting a bit loud and hectic there, so I might leave you, G. Thanks for your insights. Anything else you want to add before we go? Or yeah?
No, I mean, that's just a game that will stay with you. Very special. Very special. And very special too. What was most special about it was to see how much the country, because it was, you know, like 70,000 Japanese and sort of 500 or so Scots in that crowd. That's what it felt like. That's what it looked like. I mean, it meant so much to them. And they just drank it up. They just loved it. So that's and there was a purity in that response that, you know, as cynical rugby writers, and we don't, and especially we live in Sydney and cover the Waratahs, and that you don't see that often. That purity, I think, is what can really restore the spirit and your love for the game.
Thanks, G. Chat to you tomorrow. All the best. Stay safe and yeah, go Japan.
You too, mate. And thanks to our listeners, thanks to all of you for hanging in with this subpar audio quality. We will endeavour to get this sorted over the next couple of days. Thanks, guys. See you later.
Catch you later. Sayonara.